From KCUR Studios, I'm Sam Zeff. This is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. After 13 weeks of hearings and debate in the Kansas legislature, lawmakers still have an enormous amount of work to do. There's no budget, no tax plan, no school funding formula. How will they get all that work done when the legislature reconvenes on May 1st? I'll ask my Kansas News Service colleagues, who will introduce themselves now.
I'm Amy Jeffries. I'm the editor.
And I'm Jim McLean. I'm the managing editor of the Kansas News Service.
I seem to be the only one without a title here, but we're going to press forward anyway.
Was going to go on, Sam, but I didn't think it was necessary.
Anything you'd like to add to your title, Amy?
Sam Zeff, podcast host and reporter.
Ah, I'll go with that.
Mr. Personality.
We're going to get into the weeds on all those issues, but first I want to get your thoughts on whether the session has gone in the direction you expected. I think we anticipated, Jim, more to get done by first adjournment.
Well, I don't know, Sam. This isn't all that unusual, frankly, particularly given all the heavy lifting that the legislature had in front of it this year and the fact that there are so many new members. We hailed that at the beginning of the session as a sign of progress and thought that there would be bipartisan coalitions that would form on tax bills and school finance bills, et cetera. And that is happening. But, you know, integrating that, about a third of the legislature is new, and integrating that many new people into the process is not easy. I do think progress has been made. A tax bill has passed both houses. The governor vetoed it. They came within a few votes of overriding that veto. I'm fairly confident that the Senate legislative leadership has a tax bill in their collective back pocket that they know will pass and that they know they can override the governor's veto on. So I think that there's a lot of legwork has been done. It's true, though, that a lot of the they have to finalize an awful lot of stuff, from the budget to the tax bill, the revenue bill, the school finance bill, and lots of other little things that are still hanging fire.
Amy, your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they do have an awful lot left to do. And I think now as they go home to their constituents, there is a question about how they communicate what they have accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, look, you know, we got real close here on a tax plan. We have a proposal now on the table when it comes to school funding. We got real close on Medicaid expansion, and we're going to, you know, tweak those things and try again.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a tricky communication to put forth for, you know, what are a lot of new folks in this
state. I don't know. I think that's a really good point, Amy. I think it'll be really interesting to go to some of those legislative forums in the interim now that the lawmakers have taken this break. We'll be back on May 1st. I think one of the things they can do is they can appeal to their constituents and say, you know, you sent us to Topeka in the case of the Johnson County moderates, for instance. You sent us to Topeka to do certain things, fix the budget mess, fund schools, et cetera. Now we need your help. You know, we're within a few votes on a couple of these really important issues like the tax bill and Medicaid expansion. You need to communicate with your legislators who may not be supportive of them. And I think that dynamic is going to be very interesting going forward to see, you know, what the reaction of constituents is during the break. I do think that we've come pretty close. Now we need your help. I think that's not a bad message.
Jim, you touched on this, and I want to explore just a little bit more. There was an enormous amount of talk about whether there would be a Republican moderate and Democratic coalition.
Right.
And it seems to me that gelled in certain areas, although it just didn't get them quite across the finish line. Is that your impression?
It is my impression. It's an awful lot to ask, given how much conservative Republicans dominated the legislature over the last several years. But yes, I think that coalition has formed. And I think one of the kind of unwritten stories of this session is Jim Ward. He's the Democratic leader in the House from Wichita. His maturation as a leader. A lot of people didn't know he could do it. He's been kind of a
real firebrand.
And so when he was elected to this leadership position, people said, let's just see how that's going to work. But he's turned out to be a pretty, I think, a pretty effective minority leader. And I think he is. I bring up his name because I think he has helped forge those coalitions and brought the Democrats along. As you recall, when the session started, It was an open question as to whether the Democrats really thought it was up to them to help solve these problems that they thought had been created by Governor Brownback and the Republican leaders of the legislature. Well, Jim Ward has brought them along, I think, in a pretty constructive way, and I think that coalition has formed. You're right, though. When you put it all together, depending on the issue, they're just a vote short here and a vote short there.
Amy, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I would agree with Jim on what Jim Ward has done. I mean, I remember talking to him just as he had won the leadership post as the minority leader, and asking him what he was going to do with that and what his sort of ideas were. And he really said that he wanted the Democrats to not just be kind of the hecklers that they've been and dissenters in the crowd, but to also be bringing forth ideas. And I do think that we've seen some evidence on that. I think even it fizzled this past week, but even bringing forth some of these ideas on campus carry exemptions and that sort of thing, and having Jim Ward be the one bringing those ideas to the floor, that there was bipartisan support.
And he also has Democrats voting for tax bills that don't give them everything they wanted in terms of rolling back the Brownback tax cuts. You know, that's an important thing to keep your eye on. That's how coalitions are formed. If you have a minority group like the Democrats, they could stay outside the process and demand, a full restoration of the three tax brackets and everything else, and they could sit out there and do that. But that wouldn't be constructive in terms of forming a coalition and governing. And so I think we see signs of it, I guess, is what the bottom line is.
I also think that Anthony Hensley, the minority leader in the Senate, has also moved a little bit off of just bomb throwing and seems to be not as much as Jim Ward, but also seems to be trying to find real solutions to these problems. Mm-hmm. You have a thought on this?
Well, yeah. I think what's interesting with Hensley, I would tend to agree with you that he's moderated somewhat as well. But what I think is interesting in the Senate, which isn't occurring in the House, is the leadership there. Susan Weigel, who's the president of the Senate, is a holdover in some respects. To me, it's still very interesting as to how she managed to hang on to that position, because she's not a moderate, okay? And there was that influx of moderates in both the Senate and the House. People thought that there might be a changeover in leadership in both houses. There really wasn't in the Senate. Likewise, Jim Denning, the senator, the majority leader in the Senate, he's kind of a tweener as well. He was one of those people who came out pretty early wanting to roll back the LLC exemption in the governor's tax cuts. So, but he's not a moderate. And so I think that the Senate, it's a little bit more confusing there as to where people are on issue to issue.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the things that's so interesting in the Senate, where you didn't have you also had a significant amount of turnover. So looking at, okay, who's going to be the leadership there? Mm-hmm. A lot of the people that you might think to turn to in the majority Republican Party in the Senate, they're all freshman senators. So many of them are. There weren't a lot of places you could go to mm-hmm. to find somebody to challenge Susan Weigel as Senate president or Jim Denning as majority leader. And what's interesting about that now, though, is that those conservatives who have mm-hmm. remained are still rather outnumbered.
Oh, they are.
In the Senate. And so you're sort of seeing them kind of figure out they can either be complete sticks in the mud, or they can moderate.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting to see as you figure out, okay, they got, 25 votes in the Senate for Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. How do you get two more? I see that kind of moderate Democrat coalition kind of, stretching its elbows out a little bit
right.
into these, conservative stalwarts to be able to do that under these circumstances where the conservatives are frankly outnumbered.
We're getting into the legislative weeds now, but I guess that's what people listen for.
This is State House Blend.
State House Blend.
We live in the weeds.
That's where we talk about this kind of stuff. But there's another interesting dynamic in the Senate. Amy's right. A lot of the newcomers, particularly the moderate Republicans, are newcomers. But there are a couple holdovers who are moderates in the Senate. Vicki Schmidt from Topeka being one, Carolyn McGinn from Wichita being another. And they've been rewarded now. They were wandering in the wilderness for the last four or five five, 6 years. Vicki Schmidt now is chair again of the Senate Public Health and Welfare Committee. Carolyn McGinn is chair of the all-important Ways and Means Committee, so that they have real influence and power. And the legislation that rolled out of that Public Health and Welfare Committee this year was astounding. The CanCare Fix Bill, Medicaid expansion, that has been chaired by Senator Mary Pilcher Cook in recent years. It's a totally different dynamic. So there are changes, but it is, again, when you get to the leadership in the Senate, going back to the House, we talked about Jim Ward. I think Ron Reichman, who's the speaker there, again, is a little bit of a tweener in terms of the ideological, you know, label that you want to put on him. But one of the things that I think really has helped there was the election of Don Heineman from Dighton as the majority leader, clearly a moderate Republican who has, I think, really helped keeping he's worked well with Jim Ward and kept things moving.
Ron Reichman from Olathe, a friend of mm-hmm. State House Blend, by the way. I want to move on to the budget. So it looks like they solved the 2017 budget problem with a one-time fix. They're going to borrow some money. That's taken care of. Mm-hmm. Still looking at about $1 billion that they have to come up
over
with
the next
through
two fiscal
July
years. Mm-hmm.
2019. So what's on the table for that?
Tax increases.
But in what form are we going? What form is they couldn't get it through?
What are we going to see? They're
going to
roll the LLC exemption back. I mean, I think that's pretty much a done deal. People have been assuming that's going to be part of the mix all along.
Right.
The question now is, as you know, the governor was meeting with legislators last week and said, "Hey, how about a flat tax?" And it got 3 votes. So right. That's kind of been done. That's off the table now. So I think the question now is, you know, what kind of adjustments are they going to make in the rates, in the income tax rates, and then what kind of quote-unquote sin taxes are they going to add to the mix in terms of maybe a tobacco tax increase and an increase in the tax on alcohol. There's also a gas tax proposal floating around out there to help fund KDOT. So all of that is in the mix. There's going to be some sort of a revenue bill, some sort of a tax bill. I think that's just it's unavoidable. The question is, and I think those are going to be the component parts, but in what magnitude and what the mix is going to be, I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Well, I have to say that it sure feels like that mix, and when you talk to lawmakers, that the mix that they have there right now, closing the LLC loopholes, some sin taxes, whatever right. They do with income tax, sure doesn't feel like it's going to get to $1 billion. This is what I'm hearing.
Oh, do you mean over the next
over the next 2 years.
So you're thinking maybe there are going to be some cuts mixed in that, because there certainly is. President Weigel, again, in the Senate, is insisting that cuts be a part of the solution. But I don't think anybody has much of an appetite for deep cuts because, you know, there's been enough of that for the last couple of years, and particularly this moderate Democratic coalition isn't going to go for much on that front.
Yeah, and you know, they've got this pile of possible cuts and efficiencies right from this report that the legislature commissioned
a couple of years ago
now, and they've been tearing down those ideas one by one.
Yeah, they've been digging deep into the report and saying, well, no, this isn't going to work. No, not feasible. Okay.
Certainly has been the case on the school finance side,
right,
where they thought they were going to save maybe $60 to $80 million a year by concentrating health benefits
right.
in a single area. Legislative post audit came back and say that you're not going to come anywhere.
So, Mr. School Finance Expert, why don't you tell us how that's going to shake out?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
You thought he never would, right?
So they've passed out. Well, they actually haven't passed out a bill out of this K-12 Budget Committee. They
right.
came to a bill, but
came to agreement on a bill,
right? So mm-hmm. they're waiting to. They just hired former Senator Jeff King as their constitutional law expert. He is going to go through this bill and advise the committee whether it will
He's
pass
an Ivy
muster.
Leaguer.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
And Oxford, by the way.
Yes,
And he's going to advise the committee whether this will pass muster with the state Supreme Court. Right now, it puts $150 million a year over 5 years for a total of $750 million into public education. After 5 years, the bill that has been agreed upon, the amount of state aid would rise based on the consumer
price index. Are you
hearing,
Sam? I'm really interested. The mods who got elected, particularly in Johnson County, on the school finance issue.
Right.
Are they thinking this is enough money?
No, I think there's a lot of people who don't who believe that it's not enough money. There are certainly a handful of conservatives who believe it's way too much.
Uh-huh.
The bill originally came out with only $75 million extra. In 1 year, that was the bill that was put forward by the chairman of the committee, Larry Campbell from Olathe.
Mm-hmm.
That went down pretty hard, although there was an enormous amount of arm twisting by legislative leaders to get members of that committee to agree to that, but they didn't come anywhere close to that. So, I mean, there will be a fight about this on the House floor
because you
certainly to add more money in, or maybe to keep that 750, but make the glide path instead of 5 years, mm-hmm. 3 years. The lawyer who litigated this.
Careful with the word glide path there.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
The lawyer who litigated this, Alan Roop, who's been suing the state of Kansas for 25 years, believes that that five-year stretch is going to be too long, although the plaintiffs would accept additional money
but you know,
put in over a period of
you
time.
You asked a minute ago, how are you going to get $1 billion? Well, you have to add whatever you're going
right.
to add to school finance on
you
top of
add
that billion-dollar
that.
Figure, because
right.
the roughly $1 billion we're talking about is the amount of the projected deficit over the next 2 years that has to be filled through cuts and revenue increases. So we're really looking at approaching $2 billion need right now over the next several fiscal years. And so, you know, how they're going to generate that money, I think that's the caution that legislative leaders are trying to impose on the process, is they want to keep that figure as manageable as possible on schools.
Now, part of it they're not going to be able to manage because whatever they do on school finance
has
got to be agreed to by the state Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty big hurdle, I think. They've been trying for years to do end arounds around
right.
the state Supreme
right.
Court, and the justices have just said no.
So I take back what I said at the beginning. I think it's a pretty daunting task they have in front of them when they come back in May. I take it all back.
I want to wrap up with a purely political question. We touched on this earlier, but I want to extend it out a little bit and get your thoughts on starting today, actually, around Johnson County, lawmakers are starting to have coffees and meetings mm-hmm. with their constituents. We talked a little bit about how they're going to justify what they did and what they didn't get done. And you suggested that, well, you know, maybe, you know, that this notion that we've come close and now we need your help to put pressure on the governor or other people. But looking beyond, is it too early to start talking about what this means in 2018 when some of these people are up for re-election?
No, I don't think so either.
What do you think, Amy?
Well, you know, I've been probably listening to too many other politics podcasts.
yeah, probably.
I feel like you've strayed from the flock.
Oh, no. But I feel like there's a fascinating parallel that I'm watching right now in what's happening in Kansas and what's happening in Congress. I look at, you know, what happened with the Obamacare replacement bill, which went all kind of nowhere in Congress, where you had the Republicans split, right? You had, on one hand, you had conservatives saying it didn't go far enough to rein in costs. And on the other side, you had moderates saying, whoa, you know, this cuts essential services. And you had a similar kind of split happen on the flat tax idea the other day in the Senate, where you had this resounding 37 votes against this plan, but it was for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
On one end, you had moderates and Democrats saying, whoa, this shifts way too much of the burden onto low-income and middle-income Kansans. And on the other end, you had conservatives saying, you know, this is an income tax increase, and we can't have that, period. So you had that same kind of coalition, the awkward, you know, coalition forming against this proposal that's going to ultimately shake out, like something's going to shake out of that. That's going to be the sort of new majority. I don't know. I feel like it's going to shape what the Republican Party is in Kansas. And I think that's going to have deep implications for 2018 and certainly 2020 also.
Well, here's the deal, Sam, politically speaking. The conservatives who've lost control of the legislature for all intents and purposes are going to sit back in their minds. This is the strategy. Watch the moderate Republicans and the Democrats raise taxes. And then they're going to go after them hammer and tong in the 2018 election like they have in the past and expect similar results, a return to conservative leadership in the legislature. If, however, the electorate is serious that they want the budget problems fixed and schools funded, etc., One could imagine that in places like Johnson County and other places, that people who bit the bullet, raised taxes to stabilize the budget situation, might in fact be rewarded politically. I don't think we know right now what the answer is, what the mood of the electorate is going to be, but what's happening nationally is certainly going to affect what happens here. And so I think, as Amy says, that, you know, until we know exactly what the legislature does in terms of passing a tax bill and what the component parts of that are, I don't really think we know how can handicap the 2018 election, other than I think you have a lot of moderate Republicans who ran to fix the budget mess who are willing to take their chances 2 years from now, quote unquote, do the right thing and take their chances. So it'll be really interesting to see. But yes, that you can see it in vote after vote in the legislature already, in who's requesting roll call votes for what reasons, that, you know, politics is at play in virtually all of these issues.
The other thing that I noticed that's really fascinating is that you had for a long time in Kansas, right, this coupling of you know, fiscally conservative, you know, low tax, small government ideals with conservative positions on guns, abortion, you know, pick a social issue.
And the whole menu.
Yeah. And those things came together. They were in a way synonymous, right? And now if you look at what has happened just this session so far with these votes, those things are split now.
Right.
And so going forward, and you know, typically, it's been that those trigger social issues have carried the water for the fiscal conservative platform. Now that's not going to happen, and that's going to be what's going to be so fascinating about the postcarding.
What's really interesting, though, too, is this whole Medicaid expansion issue. That issue was nowhere. For 3 years, it went nowhere. It didn't get out of committee, and now it's passed both houses by wide margins. They've come within a couple of votes of overriding the governor's veto. They're going to try again when they come back in May. They're going to spend the next 2 weeks at all these town hall meetings putting pressure on a couple of legislators out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if they get the votes to override in the final analysis. That, to me, is an indication of how the politics in that building have shifted in a very short amount of time. And, you know, how that resonates with the electorate is, as they say, always yet to be seen. But there has been a sea change in the State House.
All right. We have to leave it there. Jim McLean, Amy Jeffries, my Kansas News Service bunkies. Thanks for being here with me.
Yeah.
Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you do your podcast business. You should get that NPR One app. And when you do, search for Statehouse Blend Kansas and explore and click on subscribe. Follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host Brian Ellison over there at Statehouse Blend Missouri is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio.